he's a-weeding out the cornrows, kneeling next to me.
Wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And that's me. Thank you so much for listening today. Hopefully you all realize that it is 11 o'clock and not 10 o'clock and you didn't lose Rusty an hour early. He showed up. You didn't get an hour's extra sleep, did you, Rusty? Oh, he's cranky, a little tired. But thank you for tuning in today. Sunday morning wake-up call here on WNRN. A special thanks out to those folks on Lexington's 95.3. And, let me take a moment and thanks folks who allow us to be here on Sundays, such as Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. You can find them with gear for your spring break adventure, including sandals and swimwear, sun protection, and all kinds of apparel from brands like North Face. Also at Blue Ridge, you'll find a selection of travel gear for the modern explorer. That's Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center near UVA. Here in Charlottesville, you can find them at Wintergreen and two locations in Richmond. Also online, BRMS.com. All right, let's get to the main reason that I'm here today, is to finally have Waldo Jaquith in the studio.
Good morning.
Snow time back in, I don't even know, remember which massive snow that it was. Waldo, how are you?
Just fine, thank you. Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. We tried this about 4 or 5 weeks ago.
Whenever we got that last big snowstorm.
Yeah, couldn't do it. I spoke to Waldo just beforehand. We're talking about, well, the snow is not going to get you here. Maybe we can do this by phone. And you said, you know what? I'm standing on my phone, standing on a stool, talking on my phone.
Yeah, I think it's actually on like the kitchen table or something. I had lost landline service. I haven't lost landline service since the ice storm in 92, I think.
And that just wasn't going to work. Your knees weren't going to hold up long enough for you to stand.
There's no cell phone service at home.
But thank you again for rescheduling your visit here to WNRN.
Sure. And the timing is good with the General Assembly session, too.
That's right. That's what we're here today, is to talk about the 2010 General Assembly session. And mainly because of a website or a blog?
It is a website.
It is a website.
Yeah.
RichmondSunlight.com.
That's right.
And so you can go to that location, www.richmondsunlight.com. No spacing.
No spacing.
And I love the reason that you've chosen this phrase. It has that quote at the bottom. So tell people why you chose that.
Sure. There's a famous quote from, God, I hope I'm right about this, Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis. God, I hope that's the right justice. Who famously wrote that sunlight is the best of all disinfectants. The idea that if you want to clean up government, you just got to show people what's happening, and that government, when sunlight is cast upon it, might just clean itself up.
And so the goal is to show everyone everything that's out there, all the bills that are presented by all the different senators and representatives, and the process that goes through them.
Yeah, the General Assembly has a website that is really good in terms of the information that's offered, but it's incredibly confusing. It's arcane. It's awkwardly assembled. It was cutting edge in 1995. Now it is pretty old-fashioned. Again, the data is really good, so I just set up this website that takes the data from their website and mashes it up with a bunch of other data, you know, blogs and recent news articles and all the bills and what the legislators are up to and the Twitter feeds of legislators and blog, all these things, in one place that makes it so much easier for people to understand what the heck they're doing down in Richmond.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are talking with Waldo Jaquith, the owner, creator?
No, actually, I don't own RichmondSunlight.com. After I built the website, I am a Democrat. I'll get that out of the way since we're going to be talking about legislation here. But the website is entirely nonpartisan. And to make sure that the website would be above suspicion as a reliable resource, I donated it to the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy the day that it launched. So I created it. I run it as a volunteer for them, but it is owned and operated by this nonpartisan organization.
All right. Richmond Sunlight, again, providing all the material that you need to see what is going on in Richmond during all General Assembly sessions.
That's
for
right.
The last 3 years?
I started it, I guess I wrote it in late 2006. So for the 2007, 2008, 2009, and now the 2010 sessions, it has been up and running with more and more visitors every year. I think last year, about 100,000 unique visitors from Virginia during the session. And I'm sure I passed that a while ago, this session, but I haven't actually counted yet.
All right. So we're going to toss out the phone number. You're welcome to call in. Waldo and I are going to be talking about some specifics that have happened in Richmond, specific bills and activities. We'll talk a little bit about some more general topics. But dial up and offer your questions, your comments. We'll be taking calls in just a little bit. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free number. And obviously this topic goes far beyond the city of Charlottesville or Omaha County, et cetera. But that is one interesting thing. When you go to richmondsunlight.com, there's a drop for all representatives. So you can find your particular representative and see what bills they have presented.
That's right, yeah.
And how and all the information that goes with that. A more basic question before we get started. How many bills are presented or have been? Let's stick to 2010. I want to know some of the sort of how we work things down. Number of bills that are presented, number of bills that sort of pass through a committee and then get sent to the governor and then might become law.
Sure. The metaphor I like to use that a lot of people are familiar with and that I use on Richmond Sunlight is sea turtles. The concept a lot of people are familiar with is that, you know, a sea turtle will go up on land and lay a clutch of eggs. And then somehow some of these eggs have to survive long enough for the little baby turtles to hatch. But only some of those manage to hatch. And of those, only some of them manage to make their way down across the beach to the ocean without being eaten by predators. And of those, only a very small number are going to live in the ocean long enough to survive to be big enough to grow up to adulthood. And that's how it works with bills, is a lot of bills are introduced. About 3,000 bills are introduced every year. This year it was 2,962, but say 3,000 bills. And they're winnowed out. You know, the first thing that happens, they get assigned to a committee. And, you know, if it's introduced in the House, it'll be a House committee. If it's Senate, it's a Senate committee. And that depends on the topic of the bill. So if it's a bill that's about the rules of the House, it might go to the Rules Committee. If it's about elections, it would go to a committee just for elections. And they have subcommittees, so it can go to each of those. So there's a lot of opportunities for a bill to die. And they do. In last year's session, also 3,000 bills were introduced. Just over 1,000 failed in committee. That is, they never got voted on by the whole House. They were killed in a vote of 10, maybe 20 people at most. And many of those died in a subcommittee. Officially, they were killed in committee. But functionally speaking, they were killed in a vote of maybe 4 people.
And we're going to get into that, about how that a fairly new way to deal with a bill.
Now, one thing that's worth pointing out is a lot of these bills, I think it's maybe 20%, 15% of these bills, are what's called commendations. And a commendation is a bill that somebody might introduce. Let's say Delegate David Toscano, our delegate here in Charlottesville, might introduce a bill saying, this bill is honoring Delegate Mitch Van Yaries, who died a couple of years ago, and it expresses the will of the House to honor him for his years of service. And that's like a fifth of all the bills that get introduced into the House and the Senate.
I have visions of that as being where everyone stands up and claps.
There is a lot of that. And sometimes they just pass in a big block.
Because you're not talking about putting a marker on the highway.
Nope.
Or...
No, it's just a piece of paper.
Anything like that.
It is a bill that exists for the purpose of being a bill. It does nothing else. And on the one hand, if you're honored by that or your family member are honored by that, it's really flattering. But on the other hand, this is, as far as I'm concerned, an enormous waste of time and money. One of the reasons legislators really like these bills, which always pass, almost always pass, by the way, so we're looking at a pretty big chunk of these 3,000. But one of the reasons legislators like them is if they honor people in their district, they'll get it framed, which the state will pay for, our taxes pay for, to get that printed out nicely, matted, framed, and presented in a ceremony to their constituent, who is guaranteed to vote for them next time, as are their friends and family, gets a story in the paper. So a bunch of the bills are that. But getting back to how a bill becomes law, or rather doesn't, of those that don't fail committee and make it to the floor of the House or the Senate, A really big chunk of those, like 80-90% of those pass. Because if a bill isn't going to pass on the floor of the House or the Senate, it's usually killed in committee. They figure out that it's not going to make it. So last year, you know, because we haven't gotten to the point this year we can do these numbers yet, but last year, of the just over 1,000 that made it to the governor, he signed just about all of them. He vetoed, there was Governor Kane last year, vetoed 12 of them. But those vetoes weren't, you know, they were overridden by the...
12 of how many?
12 of 785 that he
so
signed.
He got 785 sent to him.
That's, or well, 785 plus 12.
Okay. So,
and 12 of those he vetoed, and I misspoke just now. He vetoed, but they were sent back to the General Assembly, who overrode his veto. That is, despite Governor Kane trying to kill some of these bills, some of which could pertain, for instance, to guns in a position he didn't agree with, the legislator says, legislature voted overwhelmingly to let those bills pass anyhow. So we saw a pretty good rate of the bills passing, maybe a third of the bills becoming law.
That's a, that seems like a lot.
Well,
because
order.
When you go on, when you go to, well, and how many of those 780 are commendations?
Well, the governor doesn't have to sign commendations.
All right. So 780 every year.
Yeah.
We have 780 new laws.
Yes.
Added
that's
to,
right.
Because of those 780, I would expect that very few of them would be a law wiping away a law.
Yeah,
or wiping away more than one. We're actually
right.
only adding to the thickness of the state law book.
There are the precious few laws. A bill is only saying, hey, take this existing law and add this new text or delete this text or both. So sometimes the purpose of bills are to remove parts of laws. That happens. But far and away, we are seeing as government getting more and more complex every year, which keeps attorneys in business, so they like it.
All right, 11:12 here on WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Our guest today, Waldo Jaquith, who runs the Richmond Sunlight website. I keep wanting to call it a blog because I'm familiar with your blog,
yeah.
waldo.jaquith.com, where you do a similar sort of thing, where you always bring it up interesting, or at least interesting to many people. I would expect that of the however many you put in a day, 5 to 10 little dots. Not everyone's fascinated
yeah.
by everyone, but yeah. it's a lot of little interesting text to go somewhere else and read more about the topic.
Yeah, that's just a personal political blog. There are, I think, 300-something blogs in the Charlottesville area, and I'm just one of many at the radio-friendly address of waldo.net. That's not the one that comes up when you go to it in your browser, but sometimes I have to give it out on air at waldo.net. But that's a partisan political blog. But Richmond Sunlight is the nonpartisan one.
Well, let's start. Let me jump back to commendations.
Sure.
I want to get into some of the bigger topics. We're going to throughout the hour. We're going to get into the budget. We're going to get into the subcommittee issue that you mentioned a moment ago, where a lot of bills die in subcommittees. We're certainly going to talk about how each representative or senator votes throughout the year, and some of the issues that have been brought up recently. In fact, congratulations on being a front page article in the Daily Progress.
That's what I'm told. I haven't seen it yet, but
those evil people swiping away my story for the day. But let's start with commendations, because while I'm doing, you have something that's called a tag cloud on the website, which allows people to describe what that is briefly.
Sure. The idea is to provide a graph of topics of what bills are about. So we allow anybody to apply keywords to bills, and I review many of those. So the idea is, if you have a bill that's about, say, abortion, often those bills will never use the word abortion. It might use the word feticide. It might use the word premature birth. But they might not use the word abortion. So somebody who's really interested in this topic might go to the General Assembly's website, and they would search for abortion and say, oh, there aren't any bills. Great, nothing to worry about. Well, no, there might be 24 of them. So in Richmond Sunlight, we let anybody add the keyword abortion to describe that bill so that others can find it. So the idea is that we graph the topics of what all the bills in the General Assembly are about. So you can imagine a big long bar graph with a word and then a bar next to it for how many bills there are introduced for that. Well, we do something a little different known as a tag cloud. The bigger the word there is, the more bills that there were introduced on the topic. So when you go to the page, it's the listing of bills by topic on the website, you just see a really big list of words, just a jumble of words, and some are really tiny and some are really big. And the bigger the word there is, the more bills there are on that topic. So at a glance, you can see what the General Assembly is up to.
Right. And so the biggest word in the tag cloud is commendation.
That's right.
Which I found somewhat fascinating, and you mentioned that a few moments ago. So I'm looking through the commendations to see what's going on. And as you mentioned, some of them are just, there's people that I've never heard of. There are some that I have heard of, or at least understand what the topic is. It's like a commendation to the lacrosse group that won the state championship,
sure, yeah,
et cetera. There was one for Pat Robertson.
I saw that.
Which struck me because he is a person who brings up such positive and negative
so
emotions
divisive
from so many people.
Yep.
And usually a commendation is either a clap your hand or a, okay, I don't know what that's about.
That's right.
But, you know, whatever. If it's important to you, that's fine. But Pat Robertson.
Yep.
And I'd like to know if you can tell me how that went through and what sort of the reaction was on the floor, as well as to those who follow Richmond Sunlight.
Well, I wasn't there when it went through, and I think that was relatively recently introduced. I don't think that's one that percolated for a while. So people haven't really had a chance to notice it. It was just mentioned to me a few days ago. You're the second person to bring it up to me. So I guess the good news for the patrons of that bill is that it went through very quietly. I don't know if it went through as a block, but quite frequently, these are not voted on individually. They'll advance a block of 100 commendations, and the floor of the General Assembly, they'll just get an upper down vote for all of them, and that's the end of it, which I think is an important point, because I don't want to imply that every commendation requires as much time as every other bill. Some bills, like the budget bill, God knows this year, occupy just a huge amount of time, and commendations occupy very little. And legislators routinely complain to me about that tag lab. They'll say, it's not fair that the word commendations is so big. And I'll say, well, it's not fair that you introduce somebody commendations. But they do make a fair point, so I'm working on alternate ways to display that. So rather than the size, you could, in addition to seeing the bigger words, meaning more bills, we could also do it in terms of time actually spent on each topic. And I'm working on parsing the video from the General Assembly to actually determine how much time is spent on it. Maybe another way to indicate how many co-sponsors a topic has, or I don't know. I'd like to find some other ways to present it.
And you do have a paying job.
I do, yes. I am the web editor for the Virginia Quarterly Review, the magazine at the University of Virginia. Richmond Sunlight is purely a volunteer, evenings and weekends. There's a $0 budget for this website. It exists only because Blue Ridge Internet Works, the website host here in Charlottesville, donates a server, I think at a cost of $150 a month or something. That's it. That's our budget. That's everything. Just volunteer time. It's fun.
It sounds like a lot of volunteer time.
Yeah, but I think I'm quoted as saying in the Daily Progress today, too, I'm not like a martyr here. I really enjoy this. I like the programming. I really enjoy following the General Assembly. It can be pretty exhausting. You know, at this point, the General Assembly session started back in early January. Today's supposed to be the last day. I am tired. I'd like to get my evenings and weekends back. But give it a few weeks, and I'll be itching to write more code.
All right. Well, thanks for doing this, because I find it interesting to go through, but as far as doing all the work, I don't know. 11:18 here on the wake-up call. Hopefully you did set your clock ahead 1 hour, because it is 11:18 here on WNRN. 2010 General Assembly with Walter Jaquith, who does write the RichmondSunlight.com website. You can go there and check out just about everything about the 2010 Virginia General Assembly. So take your time and do so while you're listening to us today, and give us a call, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you're on your computer, you can also send us an instant message question at WNRNstudio at the AOL.com website. This is the Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy with a 70% chance of showers today. Highs in the mid-50s. Mostly cloudy with a 20% chance of showers tonight. Lows 40 to 45, even colder over in the valley. Mostly cloudy tomorrow. Windy with a 20% chance of showers and highs in the mid-50s right now. It's okay out there. Better than a snowy day. But cloudy, a little misty, 48 in the valley, 52 in Lynchburg, 50 in Richmond, 49 with light rain in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Quince for being here with us today, specializing in home accessories, lighting, and upholstery and furniture. Quince has a full array of items that make your home very special. Quince can be found downtown at 126 Garrett Street, next to the Moxie Salon. Open Tuesdays through Saturdays, 10 to 5, and also by appointment. Plenty of parking in the lot across the street. For more designs, it's quincedesigns.com. And WNRN wants to thank folks like Mike Jaberson, Kathy Hinchy, and Ann Evans for contributing to the fun drive this past fall. It's because of people like them that you have the Wake Up Call on every Sunday. It's also because of program underwriters like the ones you hear this hour, as well as Stacy's Music or Gearhart's Chocolatier. So stay tuned. Tell a friend about the Wake Up Call and other programming you enjoy. And be around in a few weeks as the March fun drive begins. All right, back with Waldo. Let's see. here's a comment, someone who didn't want to come on air, and there's no name. But, Waldo, I feel obligated to say this to you. The Virginia General Assembly doesn't know what they're doing.
they're all we've got. and to the credit of the General Assembly, we do have some members of the General Assembly who I think are hardworking and talented and capable. And that is absolutely true on both sides of the aisle. But there are certainly some very prominent members of the General Assembly who do not know what they're doing. As I've learned from not a whole lot of years in politics, about 15 years in politics. My God, am I that old? Yeah. Anyhow, as I've learned, having the ability to get elected to office has nothing, well, very little to do with the ability to govern, as having the ability to govern has very little to do with the ability to get elected to office, unfortunately.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this specific assembly and some specific things that have happened in 2010. This is a budget year. In non-budget years, the group meets for, is it 45 days?
That's right.
And during a budget year, they meet for 60.
In theory.
Although I believe they just 61.
61
so far
as of today.
They extended
and counting.
Themselves an extra day. One of the things that I think most people found interesting at the very beginning was we have a new governor. Mm-hmm. We moved from Democratic for the last 12 years.
Last eight years.
8 years. Yeah. And Governor Bob McDonnell takes over, and he doesn't submit his own budget at the start of the session.
That's right.
Talk a little bit about that.
The way that we work the budget here in Virginia is that the incoming governor, I should rephrase that, the outgoing governor, as in our case, is Tim Kaine, who finished up his four-year term. And in Virginia, you cannot run for re-election. He finished up his four-year term in January. Back in November, his replacement was elected. A Republican, Bob McDonnell, defeated our senator here in Charlottesville, Senator Cree Deeds, for the governorship. And Tim Kaine submits his final budget. The way that our gubernatorial terms are staggered and the way that our budget every 2 years is staggered means that the budget is submitted by the outgoing governor. It's going to be amended by the incoming governor. And then Bob McDonnell's first budget will come in 2 years, in the third year of his governorship, I guess. The awkward thing here, on the one hand, is that that means that the incoming governor, it can be saddled with the outgoing governor's budget, which, when they're from opposite parties, is difficult. On the other hand, it's terribly difficult to go from 0 to 60, because the governor has to submit the budget when the General Assembly goes into session, which is to say the day he's inaugurated or the day after. So there's no time to write a budget. It's a big deal. It takes months of work. So Bob McDonnell has proposed that we change this, that the either he create the budget that first year, or better yet, that it be moved back a year so that he have a year to warm up, to prepare that budget, and then submit it. And I think there's something to be said for that. We don't want an incoming governor to have to immediately prepare a budget. That's not going to happen. That would be a mess. But I do think he's onto something with the suggestion that it be moved back a year. I'm not an expert in fiscal analysis. I don't understand all of the ramifications of a change like that. But in a very practical sense, I think he's right. I think it's worth looking at.
But there have been some changes. Originally, that was his issue that he took up and said, well, he received a lot of grief from that. For many people.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, people don't like change. At least people in the General Assembly don't like change.
But he also received a lot of grief because people said, well, wait a minute, look at everything you said about the way the state has been run and the way that you would do things differently, and here you're not going to make any changes, despite the fact that I think between many people that his argument is valid.
Yeah.
Your phrase is you can't go from 0 to 60.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And
but he didn't do anything to start with. He just said, well, here's what he gave us.
Well, he does have the entire General Assembly session to tweak with it, to tweak it. That's why the General Assembly session didn't wrap up yesterday and is going back into session this afternoon, is because they're still working on that budget. And remember, too, that the governor doesn't set the budget. The job of the General Assembly is to set the budget. He gets to make a recommendation. He, like any board of directors of a nonprofit or something, you know, he's the executive, says, here's what I want as a budget. You guys figure out what you want to do. And certainly the Republican-led House of Delegates is very accustomed to carving up the governor's budget, having been under a Republican governor for the last 8 years, and making changes to it. So, it's true that what he submitted early on was very much what Governor Kane had put together, but I think he's had some time to, if not to make it his own, to put his mark on it.
11:26 here on the Wake Up Call, talking about the 2010 Virginia General Assembly. Our guest today, Waldo Jaquith, who runs the RichmondSunlight.com website. Very interesting. Go take a visit, because it does a wonderful job of breaking down the General Assembly into just about any way that you would like to see it. The budget session. So we've extended the budget session. Mm-hmm. Normally a 60-day process. We've extended it to 61. Two interesting things that I've found. One is that the House of Representatives folks said, we're not going to pay ourselves for this. And the senator said, well, we're going to take our pay.
Yeah, I'm of two minds on that. On the one hand, you have to admire in a populist sense the House of Delegates saying, no, we're paid for the work that we're supposed to do. And if we can't get that work done in time, that doesn't mean we should be paid more. But on the other hand, where this argument leaves us with, you know, carried further, is that it's better for people to do work for nothing. And you get what you pay for. And we have in Virginia what people like to think of as a gentleman's legislature. It only meets 45, 60 days a year. The idea is that it's supposed to be just regular folks who take a break from their jobs for a bit, like you might to serve in the Army Reserve or something.
Or jury. You get paid for the jury, right?
Sure.
It's
not much, but you get paid.
Whatever, but, you know, hey, regular folk, come over and we'll give you a little money for taking the
Well, the more that we say, well, we expect these people to work for nothing, the harder it is to get anything other than independently wealthy people. We have 13 millionaires in the General Assembly out of 140 people, which is to say about 10% of the General Assembly consists of millionaires. That's certainly more than the general public. It's an indicator to me that you got to be rich to run for office. So while I appreciate the populist spirit of the House of Delegates, you know, you go back to the very first Continental Congress, the Founding Fathers, James Madison, who represented Virginia's 5th Congressional District, he had a per diem. Our founding fathers were paid to found this country because they knew that the alternative was the only people who would show up were people who had nothing better to do.
They also recently increased the number of folks on the, is it the budget committee?
Yeah.
It used to be 6, 3 from each party, and
yeah.
Now there's 13. Talk a little bit about how the decision made for that.
I don't know enough about why, but there are some official reasons of why. I guess the good news about an odd number, anytime you have a group of people trying to come to a decision, which there might be a vote, an even number can make things awkward. I guess the good and bad about a larger number. The bad news is that it's a lot harder to agree on a budget. When there's a smaller number of people, it's easy to make the, well, backroom deals that get the budget done. The bad news is backroom deals, that's not a complimentary phrase. People don't use that in a good way. So the trade-off is between ending up with a good budget and ending up with a budget at all. The more people you have, I mean, heck, you could have everybody in the General Assembly be involved in that. You could have all 140 people. But we never get anything done. There's always somebody willing to grandstand or stand on a principle that perhaps other people don't support.
Jim Bunning.
So, Jim Bunning. So there's the good and bad from changing the size. I think it's going to drag things out inevitably with more people in the room. But maybe we'll end up with a better rounded budget.
Caller, hang on just a second. I have one last question on this. How many years or how regularly does the budget session extend itself?
Historically, it wasn't that bad. But we've had some really bad years. And I think 4 years ago, I think that went on for months. And it was a joke. Legislators had to keep showing up for work, and they would show up only to have a 1 minute session. You know, we get gaveled in. We're now in order. They take a vote. Well, didn't pass again. All right, we're done for the day. And it was just exhausting. It was not as bad 2 years ago, and things look good. I mean, they only extended it by a day, so I think we can be optimistic that they think they can wrap it up, but I hear rumors that maybe they can't. We'll find out tonight.
All right, we have Mark from Stanton. Mark, you with me?
Yes.
All right, fire away.
How did the final version of the budget more closely align itself with either the House version or the Senate version relative to public education?
Would that we knew that. That's actually one of the last things being hammered out right now. That's one of the things that's said to be under debate. And I say said because these are private committee meetings. It's actually tough to know. But we don't know how that turned out just yet. I am personally expecting that we're going to see significant cuts to public education. The question is really just how much. You might be able to find that out come tonight if they get that passed as their well, I say scheduled to, as they hope to, I guess would be a better way to put it. But I'm afraid there's no answer for you now. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. All right, phone lines open. Dial up with your question, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, or instant message, WNRN-STUDIO, at the AOL.com website. Blue Ridge Graphics is supporting us today. You can find them at Mead Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, brgtshirts.com. All right, we're here with Waldo Jaquith talking about the 2010 Virginia General Assembly session. Waldo, known for many reasons. You ran for city council several years ago.
Ran for being a euphemism for lost.
Okay.
Yes, that's right.
And runs the RichmondSunlight.com website. So dial up, ask your question, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. I'm going to ask a question, and then I see an instant message question popped up. Talk a little bit, let's go a little local for a moment. I'd like to talk about Rob Bell and Dave Toscano, because it seemed to me when I went to the tag cloud for them, Dave Toscano had a hell of a lot of commendations, and Rob Bell seems to focus on crime.
Yes. Yeah, Rob Bell is very big on the bread and butter issues for law and order Republicans. Those work out well for him. His bills about crime are generally about increasing penalties or finding things that are not crimes that he thinks ought to be. That sounds pejorative, and I don't mean to. But I say he thinks as opposed to, you know, this is not necessarily something that everybody agrees on. David Toscano has, I think, a pretty broad range of bills. Yes, commendations. I think that part of that is life as a Democrat in a very safe Democratic seat in a strongly Democratic area. His commendations this year. Let's see, who did he commended?
He did St. Anne's Lacrosse and the coach.
That's true.
That's
yeah.
Where I came up with that thing before.
Leonard Sandridge, I think, or no, that might have been Rob Bell. Huh? I should have labeled these two.
No, I believe you're right.
I believe it was
Leonard Sandridge.
So I think it was David Toscano this year who commended President Castine, my boss at the university, who is retiring in July. Gary O'Connell, the outgoing manager of the city. Jeannie Cox, the outgoing long time, and I think personally wonderful clerk of council for Charlottesville City Council. But, you know, I think one of the reasons why you saw commendation such a big word for David Toscano is Delegate Toscano is such a grab bag of bills. He doesn't have a whole lot of hobby horses. I would say that the only issue that I associate with David Toscano is bills on adoption and fostering and related parental and children's rights, because he and his wife do have an adopted son. I think that's part of his interest in it. Whereas you tend to see a lot about crime for Delegate Bell because it's so important to him, because he spends so much time on it. And of course, Delegate Bell is particularly known in Charlottesville right now for his bill that would change the formula for school funding and take money from Charlottesville and give it to Albemarle County schools, which has not been universally popular in Charlottesville.
Give us another sentence or two on that, because some people, if you don't have children,
sure.
you may not be completely up to date on that, but it affects more than just those folks with children.
Yeah, the idea is that there's a formula that uses a whole bunch of characteristics to determine how much funding goes to different municipalities for education in the state. And what it doesn't take into account is the fact that Albemarle pays Charlottesville every year as a part of the agreement that many years ago that Charlottesville would stop expanding and taking Albemarle's tax base if Albemarle would pay a portion of its taxes to Charlottesville every year. And that's something else that's very debated right now. So Rob Bell decided to factor that in and said, oh, what do you know? It turns out that Albemarle is perhaps owed more and Charlottesville is owed less. Great, Albemarle gets more money for public education. The trick here, of course, is that Charlottesville is not at all happy about that, although this formula, to be honest, does, at first blush, certainly sounds more fair.
Right, I have to count my lottery winnings in my tax base.
Yeah, so
right,
yeah, why shouldn't that be factored in? It's just that the timing of this is particularly unfortunate. But that is one of his bills. That, by the way, is not entirely clear if that bill is going to end up making it through the budget process. There is talk that is going to end up being culled and that formula process will not change. These budget bills, you can debate the heck out of each little budget bill, but when it gets to that 6 or now 13-member debate, they'll toss all sorts of these things by the wayside in order to get a budget because everybody just wants to go home.
Walter Jakewith here as we talk about the 2010 Virginia General Assembly. We got a minute or two left before my next break, so I want to jump onto some specific bills that were brought up. I love this one. House Bill 1217, allowing elementary schools to teach firearm safety to elementary school kids.
You know, I should explain. This is introduced by Delegate Linwood Lewis, a Democrat from Accomack, so, you know, way out in the eastern part of the state. It passed pretty cleanly, by and large. It never had any serious opposition. And to be fair, what this does is just allows local school boards, if they want to offer firearm safety education programs in elementary school. It doesn't say that they have to. It doesn't provide any funding. It just says that you can if you want to. And, you know, I'm okay with that. There are parts of the state in which they're very rural or there's just a lot of hunting. I mean, I don't like treating all schools in the state as the same, as if the same educational standards and exact same lessons should go to all the kids in the state. The fact is that kids in Alexandria don't need to learn how to handle a shotgun, but I do think that it might be valuable for kids in Buchanan to know how to handle a shotgun. My wife don't have any kids yet, but my niece and nephew, my niece is 6. She got her first rifle when she was 4. My nephew just turned 3. He got his first BB gun for Christmas. It's a hunting family and the idea is they should know how to be comfortably frightened of firearms, so that if were they ever to encounter one, they wouldn't do anything rash.
But there's no state law requiring anyone to have safety sessions in firearms before
any idiot can buy a gun
or being given one.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, we have a crazy, mixed, I think, dangerous set of regulations about firearm ownership in this
state.
That's
why I brought that one up, is I thought, okay, and I'm with you. Great. Let's make that, you know, available. And I see the phone ringing now. I probably got somebody with that. But we're not going to require it to adults or teenagers, but let's take advantage of the elementary school kids while we can teach them.
It could smack of indoctrination to some, I understand, but that's what I like about this bill, is that it just allows school boards to do it if they want to, and I think there's sense in that.
I picked this one out because I saw where you had a comment on it on your own website, and it's firearms as well. House Bill 886, that firearms made in Virginia and stay in Virginia through sales do not have to follow U.S. or national laws on terms of interstate commerce.
There's this big push among very conservative, I would say Tea Party-style Republicans, to believe that the 10th Amendment, and the 10th Amendment says that powers not specifically delegated to the, not reserved by the federal government are left with the state. And so there's the belief that you can ignore some federal laws by what they say invoking the 10th Amendment. And in fact, the people who do this are known, and I'm afraid I don't know if this is pejorative or not, but as tenthers, people who basically believe that the state can opt out of the federal government. You can just say, you know what, I'm not seceding per se, I still want your money. So what this is trying to do is to say that any guns that are sold in Virginia, manufactured in Virginia and sold in Virginia, have nothing to do with interstate commerce and therefore can't be regulated under any interstate commerce firearm regulation, which is to say federal law has nothing to do with it. The catch is no, which is a very big catch. The Supreme Court has held repeatedly in very clearly in completely unambiguous language that, in fact, any commerce in this country is interstate commerce. And that was built up over the course of a series of Supreme Court rulings over the course of, basically the whole history of this country. And the final decision was the U.S. v. Darby Lumber Company, which my fellow constitutional law geeks will be familiar with, a 1941 case that held basically that the Tenth Amendment is decoration on the Constitution. That is, it can't actually serve any useful purpose in the world today. So it's really neat that this bill has been introduced, but it is without any power whatsoever. And those who want to see that changed should lobby their members of Congress, not the General Assembly.
And where does it stand? Where does this bill stand in terms of current General Assembly? Is it past committee, up for consideration, or is it shot dead?
This particular bill was rolled into one of the more conservative members of the General Assembly, a delegate Carrico from Southwest Virginia, his bill, House Bill 69. And this is worth it. We'll talk a little bit more about this before the hour is up, but it was rolled into his Senate bill. It was put in the Senate, run by Democrats, by the way, who established a special subcommittee whose only purpose was to put gun bills they didn't like into it so they would never vote it. So the bill wasn't killed. It was just put in a committee where nobody would ever look at it again. Which, yeah, it was killed. But, you know, it should have gotten a vote. But instead, they hit it.
All right. I got a comment from our previous. It says, a comment from Marion Stanton, who says, it's important for city kids to learn fire safety as well.
Well, I think it depends on the city you live in and the demographic. The fact is that there are some kids who live in areas in which firearms are incredibly uncommon. And while I think it would be neat for them to learn that, and if they were my kids, I would choose to teach them that, there's just no way. It would be, I think, inappropriate for the General Assembly to require those kids to learn firearm safety in any sort of reasonable way. I think they'd rightly be upset, as parents have reason to be upset if, as they found out, you know, if you get a class in which you say, hey, the whole class, all the parents want the kids to learn firearm safety, and they're told, oh, sorry, the state doesn't let you learn firearm safety. I can see both sides of it.
All right, 11:42 here on the Wake Up Call. Tony, I got Tony from Richmond. Hang on, it's time for me to do this. 11:42 on the Wake Up Call, talking about the 2010 General Assembly session with Waldo Jaquith.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, new technology may have you thinking otherwise, but traditional books haven't gone the way of the dinosaur just yet. And the Virginia Festival of the Book is full of events. The Hook leads you through the chapters. Charlottesville citizens have their opportunity to scrutinize the upcoming budget. And there's a growing trend for backyard gardens. The Hook tells you some and where to find out more. The Hook and the red boxes all around town. And support today coming from the Irish Alley Restaurant and Pub. Serving a variety of cuisine for lunch and dinner in downtown Stanton, the Irish Alley also offers a selection of local beer, and the outdoor patio is open weather permitting. Parties of up to 40 can be accommodated at the Irish Alley across from the Byer Street parking lot in Stanton. For more info, it's irish-alley.com. And Les Temps Purdue coming up at noon. I just saw Drew Thompson walking around. He's here for Les Temps. If French isn't your thing here at NRN, that means the time's gone by. That's 80s through 90s alternative music. Tune in for it next. Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right, let's see just how patient Tony was.
Very patient.
Very patient, thank you. All right, fire away, my man.
Just a quick question. I'm not originally from Virginia. I've lived here for 13 years. I'm originally from Maryland. And every 4 years, I always stop and think and wonder why Virginia only allows their governors to serve 4 years. It seems like, you know, by the time election comes around, they're just getting rolling as to trying to get stuff done. And is there any kind of movement in Virginia to do away with that and allow our governors to serve a second, you know, be reelected?
I'm glad you asked that, because that question really was implied by what we talked about, but I didn't explain it. There are ongoing movements. Every governor, certainly by the time they're leaving, says, you know what, it'd be great if I could have another 4 years. And they know that they're not personally going to get it. There are bills introduced. Sometimes they make it a good ways. But, you know, this is a state that up until a few years ago, I mean, as a kid, you know, I would get a day off for Lee Jackson King Day, you know, that famous trio. You know, we celebrated the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr. on the same day as Robert E. Lee. Why did we do that? Because that's what we did. That's tradition. You know, why is a governor only in office for 4 years? Because that's how we do it. And the arguments are made that, well, they could run for re-election, that really the first 4 years would just be setting themselves up for the next 4 years, would just be all politics and no governance. But, you know, the argument that the General Assembly long used to keep video cameras out of the General Assembly, they didn't want you to see what they were doing, was, well, there'd be grandstanding, it'd be like in Congress. They grandstand before. They don't need a camera to grandstand. So, yeah, we do it because that's how we do it, and it's dumb. It's got to go. And every governor sees the light by the end of the term. And I think some bills have gotten close. The bills usually say, okay, in 4 years or in 8 years, you know, that's when it'll take effect, so that it doesn't actually affect any, you know, no stakeholders are voting on it. But it hasn't happened yet, but I sure hope it does.
Keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Hey, Tony, thanks for the call, and thanks for choosing the better state.
Thank you.
All right, phone lines open, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN rocks. Waldo, we got about 14 minutes left. Waldo Jaquith here as we talk about the current General Assembly session as it comes to its near end. We have mentioned this twice now, I think. Talk about how these bills can be sent to subcommittees to pass away without further look.
The way the process long worked is, let's say a bill gets assigned to the elections committee. And the elections committee and the might assign it to the subcommittee for voter registration. I can't remember what their subcommittees are right now. But, a voter registration bill is go to the voter registration subcommittee. And they consider the, 10 voter registration bills, and they return them all to the committee. And they say, we recommend that these three pass, and these seven, we recommend that they fail. And the committee would vote on those. Well, that changed over time to allow committees to their votes to basically be binding. The committee would just trust whatever the subcommittee said, because there are so many bills, they just didn't have time to actually consider all them in committee. Well, then the Republican-led House of Delegates made a change, I guess it was maybe 4 years ago, 3 years ago, in which they allowed bills to be voted on in subcommittee, and those votes are binding, but the votes are secret. They said it was more efficient to have votes that were unrecorded. Because, big government, blah, 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 you can't have all these stenographers running around recording votes. That's expensive. So they eliminated that, and they killed hundreds and hundreds, maybe it was even thousands. No, it must have been, couldn't have been that many. Hundreds of bills in secret votes. So they're assigned to a committee, they're assigned to a subcommittee, and nobody ever hears from them again. And that was terrible. And there was a big movement among open government folks to sit in on subcommittee meetings with video cameras and record them. So then you'd see them voting like real quietly, or like by wrist lifting their finger or something. They don't make it too obvious what their vote was. So Democrats in the Senate, Democrats took over the Senate a couple years ago, decry this sort of thing as terrible and childish, and it's awful that the House does this. So last year the House changed it. Now they're not secret votes. They have to be recorded. And I think that took effect this year. But the Senate just started doing the same thing. They're not secret votes. But the Senate is back to killing bills and subcommittees. And many subcommittees, they will take place before dawn. I do not exaggerate. Before dawn, nobody is there. The building is empty. And they're voting on whether or not bills should make it or not. And the idea is that the bills shouldn't be killed like this. But it gets worse. And we were just talking about that gun bill. So that bill was killed in subcommittee by the Senate. They established a special committee in the Senate. It never existed before. A special subcommittee. And the only purpose of the subcommittee was to send bills to it that they wanted to kill. I think officially it had some members, and I think they chose some members that were in really safe districts, so it wouldn't be a problem for them. And I'd be surprised if the subcommittee ever even met. They sent bills there and never even considered them, so that, it was introduced and nobody had to vote against it. Nobody had to go on the record. And they used it for gun bills that they didn't want to vote against, because that would look bad, but they didn't want to vote for, because that would look bad. So they do this, as if somehow this is better.
Well, can I go on Richmond Sunlight and check to see who voted for what?
You can only see who on that subcommittee voted for it, but the people on the subcommittee, some of those bills they never even considered or voted for, and those that they did, it doesn't tell you about how that vote would have actually fared had it gone on to committee like it should have, or had it gone to the proper committee instead of this fake committee that was set up. So you can see how people voted, but That's actually a change that I'm hoping to make to Richmond Sunlight this week, is I want to make sure that anybody looking at one of those bills knows exactly what happened. I want to put a note on it that says the Democrat-led Senate assigned bills to this subcommittee just to kill them. Because I want people to understand what happened here. Their goal is to hide that, and I don't think it's right.
Because one of the things, and I keep bringing up Dave Toscano or Rob Bell because those are the folks in my specific area.
Sure, yeah.
But this applies to anybody who's listening, whether you're in Harrisonburg or Lovingston or, you know, Lexington, et cetera, is that there was a bill, let's see, House Bill 778, which was the bill that killed, or the decision was to kill that bill that would have provided legislators voting records to the public.
This one was especially alternate universe sort of a bill. This is introduced by a freshman Republican, Jim Lemonnier. He was just elected, just took office. He introduced this bill that said that the General Assembly should make a simple change to their website. Right now, you can see votes on the General Assembly's official website. But what you can't do is see a legislator's voting record. So if you wanted to know how Delegate David Toscano voted on the General Assembly's website, you'd have to open up every single bill that came before the General Assembly this year. And open up every single time that was voted on, because most bills are voted on repeatedly in different committees and stuff, and put all of that in a spreadsheet, copying out only the things that Delegate Toscano voted on to figure out how he, I mean, that would take weeks, I guess. So Jim Lemonnier's proposal was simple. The General Assembly should, in addition to providing per bill vote results, provide the legislators vote history. So it passed the House. Normally, this sort of bill that would just die in the House. No, it passed the House overwhelmingly. 86 to 13, which is, I think it's great. It sounds to me like the House has really seen the light.
They're following the Richmond Sunlight theory.
Well, I understand that some House leadership got a little upset with me. I started putting video of the General Assembly on the on Richmond Sunlight. Because remember, they wouldn't provide video of what they were doing, but you could buy video for $10 a DVD. So I got a grant, bought all of the video, ripped it all on my Mac, and uploaded it all to the website. So they wanted to sue me, ACLU got involved. It was all required. It was all settled very quietly. But this is a big change for the House. But then the bill goes over to the Senate. They send it in the Rules Committee, and they kill it 14-2. Now, when I say kill it, okay, officially they continued it to 2011. They will give it more serious consideration next year. Bull.
There are so many accommodations to work on.
Oh yeah, yeah. So the outcome here. Oh, and I should say that the IT staff for the General Assembly. Brilliant, capable, hardworking. I love them. Richmond Sunlight exists because of them. They testified before this committee, as they were asked to, and said, yeah, it would take one of us about a week to do this, which is just one staffer. I'm sure they can find a week to do this. That's really not terrible for the amount of information it would provide to voters is huge. But they still voted it down with the committee saying, oh, it sounds like a lot of work. This is trouble. I think the problem is they don't want people to see their voting records because the people who want voting records overwhelmingly, it's opposition research. The people who want Rob Bell's voting record are the people who want to run against Rob Bell. I mean, that's a very strong, loud group of people who particularly want this data. But thing is, that's how democracy works. And there's also people like me who just want to have this data. So I did this work for them on Richmond Sunlight. I'm already recording votes on Richmond Sunlight, so I just pivoted the data rather than viewing it by bill, by legislator, and I now have legislator voting records on Richmond Sunlight viewable in HTML. It took me 20 minutes. This is not rocket science. Now, I have a much more modern system than the General Assembly. I do not begrudge them the week that it would have taken them, but still, a week for democracy. I think it's a pretty good trade.
11:53 here on the Wake Up Call. Let me thank 17 East Beverly Antiques for their support for the hour. They feature a variety of collectibles and one-of-a-kinds and vintage antiques in downtown Stanton. 17 East Beverly Antiques is a showroom for 11 different dealers to give you that shop-within-a-shop experience. And 17 East Beverly Antiques is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m., Sundays 1 to 5. And for more information, you can find them online at bevant.com. Let's see, Waldo, we had a question come in by phone while we were chatting. Is Virginia retirement system in trouble because of the proposed budget? So the Virginia retirement system.
The major proposal of note with the Virginia retirement system is that employees of the state would have to begin contributing, and that contribution would be matched in some capacity. Now, that would save the state an enormous amount of money, because right now you work for the state and money gets put away for retirement and a pension. It's that simple. So some people would probably not participate, which would save the state a lot of money. But, of course, even of those who would participate, once you're putting in a chunk, they don't have to put in as much. So on the one hand, state employees are really unhappy about this. On the other hand, it's probably a lot better than many of the alternatives, which would be a drastic reduction or even an elimination for some classes of employees of retirement. So if it's threatened, I don't know about it. And really, there's a lot of state employees. Like, woe be to the legislator who eliminates the Virginia retirement system. So I don't think it's threatened in terms of its existence, but I don't think it's going to emerge unscathed.
All right, 11:56, and you are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar, Amherst Lynchburg. A final few minutes with Waldo Jaquith, who is the creator of the RichmondSunlight.com website, and we're finishing up our chat about the 2010 Virginia General Assembly. I'd like to give Waldo a commendation for his work on Richmond Sunlight.
Actually, I'd just like to mention something here at the end that I think is interesting. The longer I have spent studying the General Assembly as closely as I have at Richmond Sunlight, the more I realize that the best legislators, as I define them, has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not they're Republican or Democrat. Bob Marshall, a Republican who, in terms of his policy positions, I just think is evil. His work in the House is amazing. The guy has no patience for people who don't follow the letter of the law. He pays very close attention to the Constitution of Virginia. He's the first to object if somebody's out of order. It doesn't matter if the Democrat or Republican. I don't like him, but God, I admire some what he does now, and I never thought that would happen. You know, the more I'm still a Democrat as much as ever, but the more I get involved with this, the more I realize that in terms of getting stuff done and doing what needs doing in the General Assembly, party position doesn't seem to have much to do with it.
All right, I have two things here I want to bring up, make sure we get in time. One I hope will, one I want to find a little bit more about. Part two is something I would hope you and other listeners can lead me to do in a future show on. I think I read, it was in the Daily Progress article that included you or a similar Daily Progress article about what's going on in Richmond during this session. Something about tastings of liquor in the ABC store, but I couldn't find a bill when I went to the liquor part on the tag cloud.
Yeah. I tagged that this morning, though. You can find it now. There are two bills introduced, one of them by Toddie Pulder, a senator from up in Northern Virginia. It's actually pretty simple. It just says that the ABC, under some circumstances, is allowed to provide tastings of liquor, putting them on par with, you know, Market Street Wine Shop or, you know, places like that. And it makes sense to me. I'm totally down with it. I happen to be a bourbon and generally a whiskey fan.
Ooh.
And it is expensive to buy a good bottle of whiskey, but if I could go in there and they had a tasting so I could try it before I dropped $50 on a bottle of whiskey, that'll last me for a year, but I'd like to do that. So this to me just seems like good sense.
Has it received much feedback?
No, I don't think anybody had posted a comment on it. It passed really strongly in committee. It passed the Senate 30-10. It's not overwhelmingly, but
it just
strongly.
Seems as
two-thirds vote in the House.
Strong, a conservative state this is, that saying, wait, the state is going to offer free liquor, alcohol? Yeah, I don't know about that.
It's a change I like to see. And I think, you know, we have some Virginia liquor companies, too, making bourbon, for instance, up in Northern Virginia. And that's an expensive thing to try. So I think it benefit Virginia businesses.
All right. I've got like a minute and a half left, and so I waited a little too long for this. Senate Bill 66, no sexual discrimination in state employment.
Oh, Lord.
So Cuccinelli sends out his memo. Governor McDonnell comes out with a follow-up that sort of pulls that back a little bit. Yeah. I'd like to do a future show on this. For anybody who's listening, please contact me, abstractme@AOL.com, or through Waldo, because you can find him at the websites, et cetera. But a little quick feedback on where this is going now. When the Attorney General says one thing and the governor pulls it back a little bit, and there's all this hands in the air.
If the governor is lucky, nothing else happens. If he's unlucky, and I think he's unlucky on this, I think it gets ugly from here. Gay rights groups are awful upset. Employment rights groups are awful upset. Because what the governor did, he did nothing to make discrimination illegal. He passed basically a non-binding statement. It was sort of a just saying. He's just saying you shouldn't not hire somebody just because they're gay or straight, for that matter. That has no legally binding authority at all. And it's counter to the Attorney General's own decision that only the General Assembly can make this change. So I think it's only getting uglier from here.
Waldo, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I found that to be a very quick and interesting hour, and I'd like to invite you back sometime in the near future to talk about what did happen, you know, once it's all over budget-wise and sure. what the governor signs.
I always enjoy being able to have a chance to teach people about Richmond Sunlight.
All right, richmondsunlight.com, waldo.jakewith.org. We'll take you to...
Waldo.net.
Waldo.net. Next week, my man Sean McCord will be filling in for me while I am commending myself in Las Vegas. 2 weeks. Bye, folks.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.